Michael, after 4 years and $40 million, the Senate committee finally came out with his report on torture. I don't know if they used the word torture. And tell us about what went into this.
Well, it's true that the Senate committee came out with the report, but it really wasn't their fault for a lot of the delay. They started the investigation, the Senate Committee on Intelligence, started the investigation in 2007 after, I think it's some 92 tapes of waterboarding were destroyed by the CIA. And that's where the investigation began. In 2009, the Senate Committee, still controlled by the Democrats, spent 4 years going through millions of documents at a high cost to try and come out with a report on the CIA's role in what they called detention and interrogation program. I think that's sort of an anodyne and inoffensive name for what should be called the disappearance and torture program, because that's what it is. They called it detention and interrogation. We call it disappearance and torture. In any case, after 4 years, they came out with a 6,700-page report in 2012, and they decided only to release the executive summary. So what all the tumult is about now is the executive summary of some 500 pages. And it was heavily redacted, not because the Senate wanted it redacted, but because the CIA fought tooth and nail over the redactions. And the Obama White House, Obama himself, actually supported having more and more redactions. There was a point when Senator Feinstein, who is usually the best friends of the intelligence agency, said, we're not going to issue this report. The redactions are so great, even in this executive summary, that it won't be comprehensible. But despite that, we're seeing a tremendous amount of press and action around the report. We'll see how long it acts. So what we have now, how long it lasts for, but what we have now is a 500-page executive summary, heavily redacted. And before I ask you the question, Michael, we already notice how stupid those redactions are, because they redact like the names of the countries where the CIA ran black sites. They call them, like, one is called Cobalt. Well, everybody who's out there in my field knows that Cobalt refers to what's called the Salt Pit in Afghanistan, which is a CIA-run detention facility north of Kabul. We know that other names like Black, Gray, were in Poland, were in Thailand, etc. So they made these redactions that just make ridiculous. So that's part of what we're seeing. So rather than give my immediate reaction to the substance of this report, I'd like to hear from my two co-hosts, Michael Smith and Heidi Boghossian, what their feeling is about the importance or non-importance of this report.
Well, we've been covering this ever since it started on Law and Disorder. But I have to say, I was shocked by this report in three respects. For one thing, the line was more than I thought. The brutality was more than I thought. The corruption was more than I thought. On the line, this report states that no lives were saved as a consequence of this program. Zero. The brutality was much worse than we had thought. We knew about waterboarding, yes, but we didn't know about rectal feeding and rectal hydration, where they left one man with a prolapsed rectum, which means it's hanging out. We didn't know about killing people by chaining them to the floor in a cold room and dousing them with water. We didn't know about the kind of details that we find in this report. And we didn't know about the corruption. This program was run by two amateur psychologists who didn't know anything about Arab culture, who didn't know anything about interrogation. They set up a corporation, and the government gave them $81 million of our dollars to run this thing from 2002 to 2007. If you do the numbers, these guys probably made about $5 million a year less expenses. They became millionaires, these two psychologists.
Michael, do you recall the names?
Yeah, I do.
I'm asking you for a particular reason.
They changed the names of the report.
We've known these guys forever. These are the original people who, you know, taught about learned helplessness years ago. And based on these experiments that made no sense and never were verified. And they actually use what do you call them? Pseudonyms in the report.
Yeah.
One is named Jessen, and what's the other
Mitchell.
Guy?
Mitchell.
Mitchell and Jessen. Yeah. And these are the guys who got $80 million and did 85% of the interrogations through their, quote, interrogation.
That's right.
Company.
They farmed it out. They privatized these interrogations. So my reaction was, the bottom line on this, which no one's talking about, particularly the New York Times, is that the It's what Martin Luther King said, that this is the most violent country in the world. The CIA is the epitome of this. The last time they were investigated 39 years ago by the Church Committee, it was found that they ran an assassination program. This time they were investigated and found they run a torture program. Torture is illegal under American law, under international law. People who do it should be prosecuted. People who authorize it should be prosecuted, and there's no talk about that. So my reaction is that this thing was much worse than we thought, and nothing's going to be done about it. Heidi, what do you think?
My number one takeaway is, again, something we've covered on Law and Disorder for years, and that is that no actionable intelligence came out as a result of these heinous practices. We've known that, but I think this shows that. And the other thing that
they went through 20 incidents where the CIA claimed they'd stop plots.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think what also offends me greatly is hearing George W. Bush's response that anyone who sort of buys into this report or gives it credence is somehow unpatriotic, which fits in with the whole propaganda that we've been fed, especially since the events of 9/11, that questioning anything the government does is an offense or an affront. And I think that's outrageous given what Michael Smith just outlined in terms of, once again, contractors engaging in illegal activities.
I want to say a word about this question of no lives were saved by it, because it's quite important in two respects for me. One is that even if lives were saved, this is flatly illegal. It's not like you can say you can bomb Hiroshima because we're going to save lives of people hitting Omaha Beach or whatever beach is in Japan, not Omaha. I mean, you can't do illegal acts. You can't kill a million civilians because you want to save some of your soldiers. And that's this case. So the first thing that hits me is that this is illegal altogether. The second thing is this point about it saving lives. And, of course, that they destroyed the CIA on. And one thing that made me reflect on was, in the report, it says the CIA had already said before 9/11 that torture doesn't work. It's not effective. They obviously knew this wasn't working. And there's instances in this where they have people like in this coffin or waterboarding. And they say he doesn't know anymore. He doesn't know about American plots. And they continued to do it for the next week.
Right.
What it brought me back to was when we interviewed, what's the woman from Algeria, Michael Smith?
Marnia
Lazreg. The professor who wrote a book on torture.
Right. And what she said was interesting because it was about torture in Algeria. And it was saying this was not really about information. This was about the end of a macho empire that was in decline. And they were going to torture the people sitting across from them. And so when you put together the facts, they knew it wouldn't work before 9/11. They didn't get any actual intelligence from it during 9/11. And so what are you saying here except that this is about torturing Muslims? It's about empire, and it's about telling the world, you fall into our hands, we're going to torture you.
Now, Dianne Feinstein says, we have to issue this report. We have to show that, quote, this is not who we are. Precisely who you are. Not me, not you, Michael, not Heidi, not our listeners, not the American people, to the extent they haven't been BS'd about this and scared about this and told that this saved their lives and told that this is how Osama bin Laden was tracked down. It's all lies. This is how you are. And if you want to actually show that you're not like this, you should prosecute the people who did it, all the way up to George Bush.
There were lots of, like, remarkable things in here, but there was one piece in that was about CIA. Report says CIA used media links to advantage. Now, of course, that you would expect. What they did was, on the highest levels of the CIA, they went to places like the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they wanted to be identified as a high, administration or intelligence official. And they leaked the stories of what they were doing in a way that would give them credit for it. And some of the papers bought into that. And that's how you got things like that movie Zero Dark Thirty. But one of the most egregious examples, seems to me, of the manipulation and the failure of our newspapers to cover it was the Times discovered in 2002 that Abu Zubaydah was one of the people that was waterboarded, someone who they believed had information about plots in the United States. In fact, he didn't. Was taken to Thailand, which was one of the so-called black sites where he was tortured and waterboarded, presumably in Thailand, perhaps at another location. And the Times had news of that in 2002, and they refused to allow it to be printed because of their fears that it would offend the countries where it were, and they wouldn't be able to get other countries to involve themselves in the program. Here they take a man to a secret detention where he's going to be tortured, and the Times refuses to print it until 2003. And we know it's Thailand because James Risen, who's, of course, been doing incredible reporting and wrote this recent book on military, reported that the country was Thailand. Heidi?
Michael, I wanted to add the fact that junior officers were not supervised properly and were sort of given carte blanche at some of these detention facilities, including at one called Cobalt, where they held mock executions without approval from the CIA. Yeah.
No, that's right. It is referred to only as Cobalt. It's actually the salt pit, which we knew called the salt pit. And it's been, people who like do this work immediately said Cobalt is the salt pit.
So yeah. We know there's no accountability in a larger sense, but there's also internally a Wild West mentality, it seems, where junior officials can just do what they want with impunity.
That's completely clear. There's nothing. And then to the extent that they were worried about accountability, they destroyed all the tapes.
Well, let me say something about that. Jose Rodriguez was one of the guys in charge of the torture program. He's the guy that destroyed the 92 videotapes that would have been used as evidence against him. Why did he destroy those tapes? Because earlier in his career, he was stationed in Buenos Aires. There was a coup, a military coup there in 1977. The countries that refused to go along with the United States isolating Cuba had their democratic governments overthrown, and Argentina was one of many in those days. And Rodriguez was down there, and he saw that the military dictatorship in Argentina was torturing people. And then he saw, just recently, that those military people are being prosecuted in Argentina, some 200, I think, Michael. I was down there a few months ago when the trials were going on, and Rodriguez, knew. He didn't have to be real smart to figure out that he should destroy the evidence because one of those days he could be prosecuted too.
That is why I think, Michael, that I'm not hopeless about prosecutions, because ultimately, maybe not here, but somewhere in the world, these people will be held accountable.
Let me tell you about one prosecution. It's called the Nuremberg prosecutions that were used by the United States and the victorious Allies in 1942 when fascism in Europe was defeated. The Germans at that time had a torture program. They didn't call it that. What did they call it? They called it enhanced interrogation techniques. Just what it's called here in the pages of the New York Times and on the lips of Obama. In German, it's called Verschärfte Vernehmung.
This was a very good article in The Atlantic talking about how that exactly what you said, Michael, enhanced interrogation was used by the Gestapo, and our enhanced interrogation is actually worse than the Gestapo's.
And when the Nazis who tortured people pled mitigating circumstances, like we didn't torture everybody, we were nice to some people, and so on, they were still tried, found guilty, and condemned, and given the death penalty. Now, I'm not saying we should give George Bush the death penalty, but what I am saying is that Bush and Cheney, I used to wear a T-shirt that said, arrest Cheney first, thanks to Lori Arbiter, and the lawyers who said this program was
John
legal.
John Yoo, Jay Bybee.
And one other guy, David Addington.
Right.
Bybee became a federal judge. John Yoo has a chaired professorship at the University of California Law School in Berkeley. I don't know what happened to Addington. These guys have all profited from their torturing people, and they've all been let off the hook.
One point I want to make about this is only talking about what the CIA did at the dark sites, dark sites around the world. The CIA claimed there were 98 people that were in dark sites. In fact, they lied, and in fact, Hayden, who was head of the CIA, told them to continue to lie that it was 98.
Keep the numbers down.
In fact, it was 129, I think, 126. Yeah. Anyway, so the point I want to make is that there was torture going on in all kinds of other places. For example, the center represents Guantanamo people. 700 people went through Guantanamo. That's the Rumsfeld techniques. Torture throughout Guantanamo, tortured Abu Ghraib, tortured other U.S. prisons. So we're talking about a very small subset of U.S. torture. a horrible one because of the waterboarding in particular and because of the confinement in coffins.
Right.
You know, these small spaces where Abu Zubaydah was put into a coffin for days, you know, 2.5 feet wide, 2.5 feet high, and basically looked like a coffin, apparently crying, all these other things while he's doing it. I mean, it completely destroyed people as human beings. And he actually didn't have any information that they wanted.
Right.
But I just want to point out, this is a small part of the program.
The only person so far to be prosecuted by the federal government for his relationship to torture was a CIA agent named John Kerouac, who's sitting in prison now. Why? Because he blew the whistle on waterboarding. The only person to be prosecuted is a whistleblower.
You know, because we do a fair amount on Palestine and Israel here. Oh, Israel did come up in the torture report in this. And the headline of the Haaretz article on this says, CIA cited Israeli Supreme Court ruling to justify torture. And they talk about the Israeli Supreme Court's ruling that you can't use torture except. And the except is where there's no other available means to prevent harm to other people. Now, of course, as we said, you can never use torture. There's no such thing as really a ticking time bomb scenario that allows you to use it. But in fact, as the report says, there was no situations like that, even assuming that might be an exception for some nut in the CIA to use that exception, or for the Israelis. There is no exception for that, but that's not what happened here. And in fact, in some of the cases the report brings out, they started waterboarding people before they even tried to interrogate them in a friendly manner.
Yeah.
So they went straight to that. Right, so that's why I think it goes just to the point of this is about macho brutality of a declining empire.
I would add that it's about profit. The role that private corporations, which, as we've discussed before, is virtually inseparable in terms of intelligence and national security functions with the government. They're inextricably entwined, and these companies are profiting off torture. So why do we go straight to the torture? Because they bring them in for their expertise in that, and they make millions and millions of dollars off of it.
I think we should... As we close this little discussion, talk about prosecutions a bit and some of what's been happening. A key turn on prosecutions of the torturers happened when Obama took office. Obama had the opportunity at that point to say, I'm going to prosecute people and I'm going to have investigations. Instead, he said, we're going to look forward and not backward, which means to say we're going to have a future without torture, but the past we'll let be. And of course, the two problems with that is, a future without torture, assuming we can even believe what's happening here, and I have some issues about that, is only done by executive order by Obama. So the next president, or if there's another, quote, 9/11 crisis, they can begin torturing again. You need to look back because you need to prosecute people as a deterrence against torture. So Obama did the key pivot away. When people say, why did he do it? You're reading a lot about, well, we couldn't convict people in an American court, all of that. You know, I don't think that's the case, but in fact, he made the decision because, let's face it, this country is run by the military, the CIA, the intelligence agencies, and Obama was unwilling to buck them, which is why the head of the CIA today is someone who was in the CIA in the very division that authorized and approved a lot of the torture, John Brennan. So that's where the turn happened. Now what you're seeing is people out there, a lot of them my friends, acquaintances, saying, well, it's impossible to get prosecutions here. We can't do it. Let's give up on this idea. We can't do it. In fact, there was a very odd editorial to me by Anthony Romero, who is I consider to be very strong on going after these guys, and the ACLU has been very good on this, that we should give pardons to people. And his theory,
I read it.
That if you pardon someone, it's basically admitting that they have a crime. They've committed a crime. Now, my view is that's not the best idea I ever heard, but I think it was done to be provocative, to get people to say, well, maybe this is an idea. It's not only not the best idea, it's unlawful and illegal. You certainly can't pardon them for international crimes, which these are, and so outside the country it wouldn't have any effect. Inside, perhaps, but I can't imagine a campaign that says, oh, let's pardon Cheney. Or that Obama's, or that the chances of Obama giving a pardon is any better than the chances of him actually beginning investigations and prosecuting people. I understand he's frustrated because ACLU has been trying to get these people, like the Center for Constitutional Rights has, for a long time. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem like the best idea. I'll just, Heidi, in 1 second, I just want to say the last word on this is that, for my word, is that I think this will renew the call for international prosecutions all over the world.
Yes.
The center has one going in Spain. We tried Germany, Switzerland. It's going to keep going. I'm sorry. Heidi wants to.
I was just actually going to ask about that. What do you think is going to be the fallout and the actions that groups and people take across the globe?
Well, the UN special rapporteur on this called for prosecutions yesterday. So I agree with you, Michael. I think that this isn't going to quiet things down. And we only got 500 pages out of a 6,000-page report. People are wondering, what else did they do?
Now, the question that begs is that in terms of increasing global anger toward the United States.
Well, you know, the CIA and its allies, including the State Department a bit, Kerry and others, you know, they kept saying you can't give this details because people are going to kill more Americans. They're going to go after our embassies. They're going to do all this stuff. Now, they just quoted somebody in an article I read, an official from Yemen, who said, this is old story to us. We know the U.S. engages in torture. We're upset that they're droning our people to death. You know, this is not about, you know, this report. The U.S. engages in torture, they said. We know that. That's not what's doing it. I mean, if you're talking about what's doing it, it's, you know, the Iraq war, it's bombings in Syria. I mean, come on. It's like, you know, this is like simply an excuse to try and keep the report hidden.
Yeah, I think it's what we've seen before. It's nothing but fear-mongering. That's what Kerry did with this. They used fear-mongering to do torture to begin with, and now they're using fear-mongering to cover it up.
And in fact, if we're worried about people being upset with the United States, they're upset because we torture. That's why they're upset. They're upset because we make war. They're upset because we use drones, not because it comes out publicly that that's what we did, but because we actually engage in torture, and we did it broadly enough that it's broadly known in the world. Just to close out this segment on torture, you can go to the Center for Constitutional Rights website. Our position at the center is there must be prosecutions, whether both here and internationally. Is it the only thing you can do to stop torture? No, but is it an absolute necessity to use it against the United States and its officials? Absolutely, yes. Go to the CCR website. The website is ccrjustice.org, ccrjustice.org. Sign the petition. Get involved in making sure that we can actually have some accountability for what I call the torture team.